number three of the podcast, and we're ready to rock, and we're going to talk a little Miami Hurricanes. And I told you that Kelvin Harris, former Canes great, would be kind enough to join us on the program to talk about that win over the Virginia Cavaliers. And he's seen a lot of winning in his time, and you can follow him also on Twitter. Kelvin, are you there, my man?
Hey, what's going on, Big O?
Hey, I am loving life, my man, and very happy this weekend because Friday started off in the right way with a win. And by the way, you can follow Kelvin on Twitter at Ebony Lifestyles. Make sure you follow him there, and we'll talk about his podcast, too, that you got to listen to. I catch it all the time also. Kelvin, Friday was one of those days that you had to be proud of the way the kids bounced back.
Oh, yeah. You know, they've been under a lot of scrutiny the early part of the year, and we've been so close, and it was just good to see that they finally were able to convert in the fourth quarter.
I'm with you. And what really, what I was impressed with was the way the defense stood up and really, you know, controlled that game, because we knew that the offense was going to be a work in progress. We knew that, you know, the quarterback position is unsettled. We understand all of that, but we did not expect a major drop off on defense. We know they lost a couple guys in the draft, but we still expected them to be the anchor of that team. And 2 weeks ago, when you watch that game-winning drive, it's just demoralizing, and it's not what you're used to seeing. And I don't know what Manny did. I don't know who he ripped or whatever, but I love how the kids responded, and they responded in the right fashion by dominating.
Well, I think it was a combination of maybe Manny, and then, you know, I heard DJ Williams talk to the guys, and then I think, just to be honest with you, you know, DJ could have talked to him, Manny could have threatened him, you know, fans could be, you know, berating them on social media. But until the people that put the pads on decide they want to change the situation, it won't get changed. And that was a big deal. They, you know, they looked themselves in the mirror, I think, and they realized that they hadn't been playing up to the standard that had been set. And they went out and they corrected it.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. What stood out to you defensively that you did not see the week before against Virginia Tech? Are there any specific things that you as a player you saw that, okay, that was completely different than what I saw the week before?
Well, first thing is the tackling was better. And then it seemed to me also that the communication in the secondary, except for one play, was better. Virginia made some great throws and great catches, but for the most part, the coverage was good. And there were no communication breakdowns like there have been on multiple times during the season. And then for the most part, when we had open field tackles, we made them. I don't know what happened in Virginia Tech, but that wasn't the case.
Right. No. What happened in Central Michigan? I mean, give me a break. I mean, that win was more disappointing than the loss to Virginia Tech. I mean, that one was just baffling on how terrible they played overall as a team.
Yeah, but I'll say this, Big O. If you watch enough college football, you realize that every team has an egg that they're going to lay. And I would rather it be against Central Michigan than the egg we laid the week after. And if you look, Clemson, you know, basically laid an egg against Carolina. And then you saw Georgia do the same thing against South Carolina. I mean, you're talking about 18 to 21-year-olds, and this is a new generation of 18 to 21-year-olds. Although you can always say there have been upsets, it's just that now the dynamic makeup of these 18 to 21-year-olds is a little different.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you there. Kelvin Harris, by the way, kind enough to join us. For you Fort Myers folks out there listening, and three-time national champion with your Miami Hurricanes, follow him on Twitter at Ebony Lifestyles. On offense, I know that they still don't have that answer at quarterback. I think Jaren
maybe
is
they
actually,
do.
Well, I just don't think Nicosi will ever be a good passer. That's my thing with Nicosi. I just don't think the accuracy is ever going to be there with him. I think you have a better chance in accuracy with Jaren Williams than you do with Nicosi. I know Nicosi's more mobile, and that helps him out there to keep things alive. But when it comes to accuracy, I just – Kelvin, I'm one of those guys that you either have it or you don't. And guys that are inaccurate in college, they stay inaccurate in the NFL. And when you used to play pickup football in the park, only one or two guys could actually throw the ball. The rest of us, we wanted to be on the team with the guy that could throw the ball. It's either you have it or you don't, my man. And I don't think Nicosi has the accuracy issue. That issue with him will always be there. It's like watching Ryan Tannehill. Same thing. It's always going to be there.
Well, Ryan Tannehill was a receiver in college, so, I mean, but I'll say this about Nicosi. In the preseason, well, let's just say this. We're not even having this conversation if he wasn't trying to be a porn star and a video maven last year. And I think that's what brought this all on. You know, instead of him concentrating on the playbook, he was trying to be get an award on Pornhub, and that led to this. And Coach Johnson used to have this thing that was on the wall when you went into the training room: can we trust you? And that's what playing time is all about at any school or in any professional organization: can we trust you? And honestly, up until probably about 2 weeks ago, I don't think they could trust him. But I got to be honest with you. I thought he was going to bolt as soon as he didn't get the job. And I always thought he had the ability. But I think sometimes when you have something that you think is entitled to you taken away, it makes you regroup and reflect on what are your priorities and where your head is at. And I think he's done an excellent job being a great teammate during the year. But one of the key things was Bandy said after the game is that when he leaves the facility late at night, Nicosi Perry is still there watching film. And I think that's the difference. And, you know, one of the things I saw with Jaren Williams is he seems a little hesitant because he's still, you know, figuring out progressions and reads and stuff like that. And people got to remember that he's only in his second year in college. Now, it doesn't seem that big a deal, but Nicosi's been around 3 years. So he has an extra year, and it's a little easier for him to go through the progressions. And when he gets outside the pocket, some of the throws he made were very impressive.
No, that's my theory also. These cats that do this, it's because they're great athletes. And so they'll have their moments. Like Ryan also would do the same thing. He'll freak you out and, wow, that's a hell of a throw. Mariota will do the same thing. Some of these guys, they're just great athletes. But you said something really, really interesting, Kelvin, talking about his dedication and how he's there watching film. Have you heard, was there a moment that triggered all of this? That not just losing, like you talked about, losing what you thought was, you know, yours, but there had to have been something that really helped him mature a little bit so he can become a better player.
Well, someone who works in an organization, works in a program, was telling me that, you know, him and Jaren, I think, he believes they kind of took it personal when Jalen Hurts was being recruited here. And then when Tate Martell showed up, you know, I think that's when the shock of college, major college athletics, started to set in, you know. And it's like, yo, they trying to get rid of me. So the thing that is impressive is, you know, I know that they talked about how Jaren thought about leaving, but I remember, like, seeing him on Twitter when he shut it down. And he shut it down. He lost weight. Both of these kids, I think that was, I think around January when Manny got the job and they started, you know, seeing that Tate Martell was coming, and then Jalen Hurts actually came on the visit. I think that might have been, personally, looking at it, I think that might have been the moment. I personally think that, you know, the light came on. It's like, yo, they really are trying to replace me. And, you know, the competitor in you says, he ain't better than me. I watched him throw last year. So what do you do? Do you sulk and say, well, I'll just transfer? But neither one of these kids did. They said, well, he got to beat me out. And so, you know, Tate Martell comes in, Jalen Hurts goes to Oklahoma. And then these kids are on social media a lot more than, you know, what we are. And I know they had to see all that talk about Tate Martell coming in and winning a job. And it's like, you got to have some, you know, that's what I wanted to see out of these kids, is personal pride aspect, you know. And I think it kicked in. And, you know, I get what you're saying about the accuracy, but Nicosi, you know, he's learning touch. He's gotten better with the touch. And honestly, those balls that he threw this weekend, those receivers were supposed to catch those. That fade route to K.J. Osborne, that's on the receiver. The pass that Pope dropped, that's on the receiver.
Yeah,
you know.
You're right.
So we're close. We're close as a team. But this is going to be interesting how they navigate this, because, you know, everyone says you don't lose your job because of injury. But ask Wally Pipp how that works.
Right. Yes. And listen, if you had a lot of confidence in him, because this is what I would have done 2 weeks ago. I would have brought in Nicosi for just one series and tell Jaron, hey, you had a terrible quarter. I mean, the kid had not thrown an interception all year. So to crap on him after one quarter was so unfair, I think. In my eyes, I think Manny was unfair there. I probably would have sat him for one series and say, hey, take a step back. Take a breather here. We're going to put in Nicosi for a series. I want you to look at what's going on. Focus, refocus yourself, and get ready for the next series. But he kept him on ice for the rest of the week, for the rest of that game, and Nicosi played all right. And then now, you know, the injury, I don't know how much the injury played into him not coming back into that game. We really don't know all the ins and outs all the time about what's going on behind the scenes. But now...
Yeah.
But now, if he was healthy enough to come back, then Jaron has to have some serious doubt in the back of his mind that, okay, this coaching staff doesn't trust me anymore. That's not a good situation there, Kelvin. You want to have as much confidence as you can in your quarterback. You tell me.
Well, let's look at this. Let's just go big picture.
Okay.
All three main schools in the state of Florida. Excuse me. No. Make it four. I'm going to throw Central Florida in there. All four of those schools play two quarterbacks. Think about that.
That's true.
So
that's true.
If you're a quarterback now, the precedent has been set that you don't have that safeguard that every other position never had in the first place. You know what I'm saying? No other position on the field can you stink up the joint. Let me put it this way. If we're playing in a game, and I let Geno get sacked three straight plays. And then I come back, and the next series he gets sacked three straight plays, and I'm the guy that gets beat. How long do you think they're going to keep me in there?
Oh, no, not very long. No, definitely. Geno will be the first one to say, get this guy out of here.
yeah, and believe me, quarterbacks will do that. You know, Dan Marino, I remember going down watching him during training camp when I was in college, and, you know, if you messed up, he'd let you know.
Oh, yeah.
And he would – I remember him telling Gary Stevens to get a guy out one time. I was like, wow. Ooh, I don't want to mess up around that guy. But I can't get mad at him. Like, I've tried to remember. I've never in my life remember a quarterback throwing three straight picks in consecutive series.
I know.
It's unprecedented. And at that point – and then – if you go back and look at the game, he was off from the beginning because the first interception, bad placement. The second interception, and if you look at the TV copy, Coach Enos is telling him if you throw it over the other shoulder, it's a touchdown. Right. And it was not only inside, but it was short. So, you know, Wiggins is fighting, you know, get inside position, and maybe he could have probably raked the guy's arms. But the ball was, like, literally thrown to the DB. And if he'd have thrown it over that outside shoulder, it's 6 points. So he obviously was – and in the third interception, it's like, hey, I don't know. Was he throwing it to you in the stands? I don't know who he was throwing to that one. So it's like sometimes a coach knows. It's like, you know, just like with a pitcher, you know, there's just sometimes he goes out there and he ain't got it. But, you know, not only did he throw three straight picks, but he put us in a situation where we're down 28-0.
Yeah, no, it was a hell of a hole. It's just you wonder where his psyche is right now as it is. So let me ask you, Kelvin, what are you doing in the next game? Who are you starting?
I'm starting Nkosi.
Really? Okay.
I'm going to tell you why. Bud Foster, after that game, I don't know if you saw, if you've seen the clips of it, but he comes out and says, hey, I watched film on these dudes. I told my guys we're going to play cover one press. Go get the ball. Because they had no respect for the deep ball. And then he says, well, when that other guy came in, we had to go back to two high because he could move around, he could throw the deep ball. So that's a telling sign when the defensive coordinator is just blatantly putting it out there that, yeah, you guys want to throw it over our heads. And, you know, that also hurts the running game because that means they got an extra man in the box. So cutback is gone. And, you know, they can blitz the A-gaps. I mean, it, you know, Nkosi comes in, he makes that one throw on the sideline where he hits Jeff Thomas on the third down play. And now you as a defense coordinator got to say, ooh, okay, this guy can throw it.
Right.
So now you got to go double high safety. So now there's an extra a backside lane in the running game. And now you can run the ball a little bit more. And play action gets set up. And, you know, play action is a big part of what Enos does. I just think that we're so close to busting long passes. And I think this week, I think we should, you know, I've looked a little bit at Georgia Tech, and this is, I've said this before, this is that slot buster. This is the fat girl at 3 o'clock in the morning. I mean,
well,
we got to get up the side.
Well, they're not playing that triple option crap anymore, right?
No, and that's the tough part about Georgia. I'm going to say this, though. Georgia Tech program in about 3 years is going to be tough because now they are able to recruit the Atlanta area, and offensive linemen, quarterbacks, and receivers are going to want to come there now.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on a second. Receivers were still going there because they were recruiting Hall of Fame or Pro Bowl-like receivers, man.
Well, they were bigger. They were the, you know, I mean, Demaryius Thomas looked like an outside linebacker.
Man.
I'm talking about, you know, speedy guys who don't want to block.
No, I got you, but it was just weird because they recruited two of the best wide receivers in the NFL the last 10 years.
I know. I was there when they had Demaryius Thomas. I went to me, Coleman Bell, Ryan McNeil. It was about eight of us on the sidelines when Randy was there, and we played them in Atlanta, and they had an all-white, one of those whiteout games. And, man, you're looking at their receivers like, what the? I mean, they were huge,
yeah.
But they were great blockers. I mean, they were just blocking our DBs, you know, out of bounds. But now they can get that fast twitch guy now. You know,
Smaller,
quicker guy, and I think in 2-3 years they're gonna take their lumps because their offensive line is just in a disarray. But
It's a change of scheme. So it's, you know how it is. That first year is a disaster for any program when you're making the drastic changes that they're making. I mean, it's just so tough. And by the way, speaking of receivers blocking, the Canes receivers did a nice job of blocking in that game.
Except one instance.
Yeah, okay. But overall, I saw a lot of good blocking by the receivers.
Oh, no. You know, it's funny because when DJ, on his screen, he got great blocking from everybody. And then last week, when he got that one in the open field, it was the receivers that helped him get it to the house. And the one instance I'm talking about is when Brevin Jordan caught the screen pass.
I got you.
And Mark Pope, you know, could have, all he had to do was just get in front of that guy, and Brevin scores.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some tells me his coach reminded him of that in the film room like eight times over. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm sure that's the case. All right. So with Georgia Tech, hey, Georgia Tech at Pitt, at FSU, this is 3 weeks here that you can get a little healthy here in the win column.
Well, this is, I know after Virginia Tech, and, you know, Lamar Thomas called me yesterday, reminded me of what I said about Virginia Tech. That, you know, I said, you know, he called me up. I said, man, Virginia Tech's really bad. We ought to run them out of the stadium. So, of course, yesterday he's like, He asked me about Georgia Tech. I said, man, they are really bad. He said, yeah, I should have recorded you. You said the same thing about Virginia Tech. I said, no, you don't understand. They are really bad.
Yeah.
I mean, so the first test is, can we come out and put our foot on their neck, you know, like we're supposed to? Then you got Pitt at Pitt and at FSU. We got 50-50 games after that. Pitt, FSU, Louisville, Duke. And then FIU is a layup. So you had two layups sandwiched in between, you know, a set of 50-50 games. Pitt.
Can we say layup? Have we earned that yet, Kelvin? Because I don't think you can say layup because they're not a good football team. If they were a good football team, then I give you the layup. It should be a layup. But, you know, when you struggle against Central Michigan, I can't expect you to say layup against all the other ones because FIU might be tougher than Central Michigan.
Yeah.
They should win, but see, when it's your Canes, Kelvin, we can say layup
right about that.
Because you guys were smacking people down. These cats are not at that point yet. I can't say layup for anything right now for them. A win maybe, but not a layup.
Well, I'll say this. You know, we all wanted it. You know, I think fans, there's a lot of fans who feel betrayed because they heard this new Miami thing, and they just thought that magically by Manny coming up with a slogan that all of the bad habits would just literally go away once he snapped his fingers. But the staff knew. And, you know, I had a conversation with Brett Romberg beginning of camp. I remember I talked to him, and he said, man, it's bad over there. With the offensive line. I'm like, how bad are we talking? Man, it's horrible. And I was like, oh, okay. So, you know, at that point I know the only way that it gets better is you got to get reps. And it isn't just with our offensive line. Offensive line play right now is at an all-time low because it's not being taught at any level properly because you got a lot of gimmick football because everybody wants to run these spread offenses and slide the line and they're not teaching pass protection. They're not teaching the basic things. We're lucky enough to have a guy that's coming from the pros who the kids believe in and they believe in his philosophies and technique. Problem is you got to go play and the only way you get better is through playing games and getting experience. So we have to literally watch an 18-year-old grow up in front of us, two 18-year-olds. This time next year, Big O, we won't be having this problem.
I'm looking forward to it. Are you a Manny Diaz believer? I am.
Yeah, I am.
Even though it's been kind of shaky here at the beginning, but again, he's a new head coach. He's not going to be a great head coach right from day one. He's got to learn. It's kind of like what we're watching with Flores. Although I got to say, with the Dolphins, I have seen progress every single week from his football team. His football team is getting better every single week, and they have the least amount of talent in the NFL. But
I hear people say that, but let me tell you something. Most NFL teams, the difference between the New England Patriots and the Miami Dolphins is four players. Take the top four players off of any team, and they're all the same. So take Tom Brady off the Patriots. What are the Patriots?
Oh, no, they'll be lost. Yeah, they'll be lost. Unless they can get the Allen kid that came in for Cam Newton, who's about to take his job. Then you get those lucky moments.
Hey, let's not get carried away. He's not taking Cam Newton's job.
I don't know, man. That kid keeps winning.
He keeps winning, but, you know, honestly, when push comes to shove and it really gets heated and it steps up a notch, I mean, I'm not saying he's not going to be a good quarterback in the league.
I have no idea.
Cam Newton has something special. I mean, right now, Cam Newton is kind of going through what Jaren Williams is going through. And I'm going to say this about Jaren Williams and the same thing about Cam Newton. Arm problems don't go away in 2 weeks. I don't think Cam Newton's going to be playing much this year. And I would be surprised if Jaren Williams is 100% the rest of the year if he plays much. Because if it's been bothering him for a couple weeks, it's not going to get better by him throwing. He's got to rest it. And he may be trying to push it because he sees his job going. But the problem is the more you arm, it's just like with pitchers. You know, it's the same thing. So you know, it's a tough situation.
No, I'm with you there. Yeah, no, and there's no doubt about it, man. Well, we'll wrap it up with this. What do you got, Lions or Packers tonight?
I know they're playing in Lambeau, but Matt Patricia's changed the culture there. I'm going to go with the Lions.
Wow. All right. The 2-1-1 Lions to surprise the Packers tonight. Oh, one more thing I got to ask you. Who's the best college quarterback? Who's the one that the Dolphins should take if they do have the number one pick?
Justin Herbert.
Wow. To explain, please.
All right. Tua is running the offense with four cheetahs.
Okay.
All he does is throw slants and stops, and they take him to the house. The two instances that I've seen him in his career play against defenses that were comparable to what he was seeing in the pros, he peed on his leg and stunk up the joint. Georgia last year, Clemson in the championship game. Justin Herbert has gotten better each year. Now, first of all, let's look at this. He did something that was interesting. He could have came out last year, but he said, hey, I didn't play that good. I need to come back. So now you're talking about a guy who has over 40 starts. Same thing with Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones kind of hit the ground running because he was a serviceable guy because he had enough starts. He'd seen enough stuff. He had a good teacher. And it's sort of the same thing with Justin Herbert. I'm just not on the Tua train because what does he do that's special? You know what I'm saying?
Accuracy.
He's not particularly tall. Doesn't have a cannon arm. He's very mobile. He's pretty smart. But when you look at Justin Herbert,
he's accurate, Kelvin. Accurate.
He is accurate.
Ball
on a short range pass.
Yes. No, even long range. Ball placement is beautiful, Kelvin. I got
the ball placement is beautiful. But look, Big O, you can hit a lot of those receivers. They're so wide open. In the NFL, nobody's open. Nobody. And I'm going to be honest with you. If you talk about arm strength and accuracy, Jacob Eason is in this conversation too.
Yeah, a lot of people like him too.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, none of them, in my opinion, is Trevor Lawrence. I mean, he makes a couple throws every game. And I'm like, man, he needs to just stop playing.
Right. Yeah, but what about Justin Herbert? There aren't a lot of those badass games in his resume. That's the thing. You talk about this guy peeing on his leg. I haven't gotten an opportunity to see if Herbert can, you know, get a big stiffy or pee on his leg. I'm not exactly sure which one it is.
You know what? No one really watches the Pac-12. I mean, come on. It comes on late. And I mean, if you got a choice between a Pac-12 game and the ABC Saturday night game, you know, you know. But I remember last year, the game that Mario had a coaching faux pas and they lost it because instead of taking a knee, they handed the ball off. He really played good in that game. He had a couple situations where he made some bad decisions. But so far this year, if you watched him in the Auburn game, he looked really good.
Okay. All right.
Looked good.
All right.
And I just think that, you know, from a coaching standpoint, you know, he was raised right. He's easy to coach. He's just got something that you know, he's 6'6", and he's athletic. He's just as athletic as Tua, but with a better arm. But you're right. Tua is very accurate on those short. He's a Jaren Williams type because Jaren is extremely accurate from 20 yards in.
Tua is very, very accurate, man. And the Joe Burrow kid is also climbing the charts, too, with LSU. He's doing a nice job, too. Follow Kelvin on Twitter at Ebony Lifestyles and Miami Huddlecast. Tell the folks.
Oh, with a dash. Let's not forget the
dash.
That's
right.
I didn't put it there, but, you know. Miami dash Huddlecast.
Huddlecast. Make sure you listen to it. Tell them about the podcast. How many times a month do you guys do it?
I do it every week, and normally I do it on Thursday, but this week is going to be Wednesday because we got a 12 o'clock game, and I'm having a beat writer on from Georgia Tech, Tori McElhaney. She's going to break down Georgia Tech's roster and basically tell us what's been going on with this team and the transition, and we'll talk personnel and, you know, some schemes and stuff like that, and I may have a surprise guest. I got a confirm that today, so I won't put that out. But, you know, I'll give you my prediction, and I'll give you key players and all that stuff, give you a breakdown of the game.
And hardcore football talk. You'll love it. If you're a Canes fan, it's a must-follow. Miami-HuddleCast. Lock it in. Follow, subscribe. Kelvin, thank you for taking some time and joining us here on the podcast, my friend. I really appreciate it.
Hey, no problem, no problem.
You got it, baby. You be good out there. Thank you, Kelvin.
All right, yeah, you too.
You got it. There you go. Kelvin Harris, man, kind enough to join us here on the program. And how about that? He likes Herbert. Interesting. Listen, I know I'm going to get it from a lot of NFL people. They're going to tell me, hey, I like Justin Herbert too. He's a player. He's got the makeup. He's the guy that has the ideal makeup. Like, Tua doesn't have the ideal makeup for an NFL quarterback. Trevor Lawrence does. Okay? Kyler Murray did not. This kid looks the part. He's the size. He's the 6'4", 6'5", 240, 230, whatever it is that he weighs. I'll look it up. You know, but it's just, that's what it, big arm, everything, you know, stout kid, not a skinny guy, all that stuff. Everything that you look for, okay, and he's going to have experience. One of the things that Herbert just talked about, that Kelvin just talked about Herbert, he's going to have over 40 starts. You know, that's a lot of experience, because when you get the guy that doesn't have experience, Mark Sanchez, Mitch Trubisky, Ryan Tannehill, you get those guys that don't have a lot of starts under their belts, you don't know who they are, because you haven't seen them under every scenario. If they've only played one season or just over a season, it's just not enough. But when you see a guy's played 3-4 seasons, now you can go back and find him in the toughest moments and find out how he responded in those moments, comebacks, all those kind of things. But that's the problem with Justin Herbert. Now, Kelvin is right about this. We don't watch the Pac-12 that much. We just don't. I do watch it, not as much as I should probably, because it's on the West Coast and some of those games are late. And let's be honest, it's USC. I'll check out USC. But you're really not checking out Arizona. Hell, I've only watched Arizona State because of Herm Edwards. That's it. Only because I like Herm. He's such a likable dude, and I've met him and dealt with him and all that. And you can say whatever you want as a coach and all that, but that's another discussion. But I really wouldn't watch Arizona State. You know? The last time I watched Arizona State was for Brock Osweiler. Okay, that didn't turn out too well either. So overall, I get it. Kelvin's right. We don't necessarily focus, but I do find myself looking at Oregon games because I'm a Dolphins fan, because Justin Herbert is on that list. I do watch myself trying to find the Washington game now because they've got the Georgia kid now that I'm brain farting. Kelvin just said his name now, and I'm brain farting. But, you know, they've got him, and just like all the other quarterbacks, Fromm in Georgia and the LSU kid and the Alabama kid, all that. So I find myself trying to watch all those games because I say, okay, well, they've got this quarterback. But he's right, overall, the West Coast isn't the sexiest one of them all. And I also have to admit, Jacob Eason, by the way, I also have to admit that I've lost a ton of respect for the Pac-12. Okay? I'm sorry, but it's just one of those things that I don't believe in that conference. Every time they got to play the big boys, they get spanked. But, yeah, I do catch myself. I mean, last week I made sure to watch LSU and Utah State because of Jordan Love. Sure, Joe Burrow was in it, but I wanted to see Jordan Love. And this was the third time I've watched Jordan Love this year. So us Dolphins fans, we might be watching more West Coast football than we've had in a long time, because Herbert's in Oregon, Easton's in Washington, Love's at Utah State. I doubt KJ Costello is a pick, but he's with Stanford. Doesn't even start all the time. So the West Coast has forced us as Dolphin fans to adjust our clocks a little bit and say, hey, there's some West Coast action that we've got to take part in here. Love it. I love how we're so draft intensive. Oh, and speaking of draft, remember that our draft party is set in Vegas. Hotel and everything. I just got word, actually, from NorCal that they've cut a deal with the hotel. So if you want to get group rates with us, okay, because you're going to get a better group rate with us than you will if you call on your own, because they are raising prices big time during that weekend. I think Bill wants us to go out there 3 weeks before the draft. Every day gets earlier. He called me yesterday. Hey, no, I think we need to be out there 2 weeks prior. I'm like, Bill, we're not on for 2 weeks. He's like, no, I need to scout the place out. I need to make sure that all the strip clubs are in working order. So, you know, it's just one of those things. So if you go to Vegas and you see a guy just taking notes at a strip club, that's probably Bill. So he just wants to make sure. He's a facilitator of fun. He wants to make sure that all the Dolphin fans, he wants to scout all those strip clubs to make sure it's fine for you guys out there. Okay? Reading an article here, it says Ravens on pace to break all-time record for rushing yards in a season. Of course, your quarterback rushes for a ton of yards in every game to go along with your running backs. You certainly aren't going to be breaking records passing when you've got Lamar Jackson. So, yeah, you'll be breaking records running the football. Okay? Yeah. That's about it right there. It's kind of funny. Charger players didn't like Steelers theme music playing at their stadium. Did you hear about that last night? It was like 80% Steelers fans at that stadium. Look, Spanos is a guy that's disliked by everybody as it is. So now he brought a team to a city that doesn't care about his team. He ends up in a soccer stadium, 25,000-seat stadium. 80% of the fans that go to that stadium are rooting for the other team. The Chargers fans in San Diego are not traveling to that stadium to support them. I don't know who is, but it's very few people. And then they're going to end up as a second tenant in the Rams stadium, where they'll be paying them the rent, and they'll have all their limitations there. Man, couldn't you have worked out something in San Diego to stay there and keep your identity? Just the Spanos family is such a disaster. So the Chargers, by the way, they have dealt with the opponent's fans now since they've been in this new stadium. It was no different on Sunday, as cheers for the Steelers could be heard throughout the Pittsburgh 24-10 victory. It felt even more like Heinz Field in the fourth quarter when the opening strains of Sticks Renegade began playing on the stadium speakers. Chargers running back Melvin Gordon noted the song is the theme music at Steelers games. Neither he nor his teammates like guard Forrest Lamp appreciated hearing it at their home field. "We're used to not having any fans here," Lamp said via the Los Angeles Times. "It does suck, though, when they're playing their music in the fourth quarter. We're the ones at home. I don't know who's in charge of that, but they probably should be fired." And, you know, the song sparked loud cheers from Steelers fans, which made it hard to hear the song switch back to Rick Ashley's Never Gonna Give You Up in an attempt to joke at the expense of those fans. The joke, however, missed its mark. The powers that be might want to avoid any Packer theme music humor come week 9. Don't go back, go. They're going to be doing the Lambeau Leap. inside the Home Depot Stadium, the Home Depot leap. I mean, it's home field advantage. That's so sad. But again, that's what happens when you have crappy ownership. It's not, and let me tell you something. For those that team, for that coaching staff, the front office and the players, especially the players, to overcome all of that adversity last year and have the season that they had and go to the playoffs, awesome. Awesome. And they had injuries too. I mean, everybody gets injuries, but I got to throw that in there too. Think about it. You have no city. You have no stadium. You have no fan base. Nobody cares about you. Everybody's cheering for the opposing team in your own stadium. So you're basically playing 16 road games and you kicked ass last year. That's awesome. I mean, that's as impressive as it gets to be able to compartmentalize all of that and leave all of that out. That's pretty impressive, man. Not as impressive as EJD Construction, because Eric and John, they've been doing it for a long time, man. Fully insured, $2 million in liability, $1 million in workers' comp. The communication with the owners and the architects is second to none. That's why when you call them at 305-318-4978, you will get the work that you expected, because communication is second to none. Affordability without compromising quality, and Shell Construction in-house, that's how they keep their costs down. Call Eric and John right now, 305-318-4978. We're talking about custom home construction and major home remodeling. Please call our friends at EJD Construction, 305-318-4978. Ah, yes, we are ready to wrap it up here on the show. A loaded one today. We got to thank Chris Perkins. Excellent work by Perk. Talking some Dolphins football. Ian Margol. Talking a little Panthers hockey. And they're getting their asses kicked by New Jersey. It's 4-3 now. They've come back a little bit. It was 4-1. It's 4-3. They're coming back. They got one more period to go. Let's hold out hope that they can fix this thing. Oh, frustrating, folks. Frustrating. We thank Kelvin Harris also from former Canes great, three-time champion. Check out his podcast, Miami-Huddlecast. Follow him on Twitter at Ebony Lifestyles. We also thank Ian Margol from Channel 10 for joining us. Follow him on Twitter at Ian Margol, WPLG. Catch his work there doing news, but he covers the Panthers too. Excellent insight on the Panthers. He was absolutely fantastic. Maybe the Panthers will be fantastic in their final period and tie and then pull away and win against the Devils. We'll see you tomorrow right here on the Big O Show, and we'll be live tomorrow. Big O Show.